Hello, this is Hugh Barron. I'm your moderator for this evening's discussion. I'm here with State Senator Vincent Hughes, and we want to welcome you to this live telephone town hall. If you have a question for Senator Hughes or any of his guests this evening, you can press star 3, that's star 3 at any time on the phone's keypad. Now I'd like to welcome Senator Vincent Hughes.
Thanks, Hugh, and thank you for everyone for participating on tonight's call. We're holding this live telephone town hall where we'll be talking about the coronavirus, COVID-19, with my special guest, Dr. Whitney Kabe, who is a professor at Temple University's Lewis Katz School of Medicine, Montgomery County Commissioner and Chair of the Montgomery County Commissioners, Dr. Val Arkush, and Michael Froelich, who's the Managing Attorney at Community Legal Services. They're on the line to answer as many calls as possible. Understand this, that this will not be our last telephone town hall on this matter. We'll likely have one again next week and try to keep these going as often as possible to try to get good, solid information out to our constituents and any others who are listening to the call. This format will allow you to listen in, ask a question from the comfort of your home or wherever you may be. If you'd like to ask a question at any time, remember, if you'd like to ask a question at any time, please press star 3 on your phone. It takes a few minutes to line up the callers in the queue, so plan on speaking for about 5 to 10 minutes. We're going to be on this call till about 7:30. We're going to be on the call till about 7:30. As consistent with the instructions from the governor, as consistent with the instructions from the mayor of the city of Philadelphia, as consistent with the instructions from our commissioners in Montgomery County, our district office is closed to the public, but we do take calls and emails about issues that folks might have. And we're also doing a very aggressive online communications program through our e-blast. If you're not receiving our e-blast, call our office and leave your email address, or go to my website and make sure your email address is added that way. Website is senatorhughes.com, senatorhughes.com, and of course the office phone number where you leave a message will be 215-879-7777, 879-7777. Hugh, is there anything else we need to go over?
No, I don't think so. I just a reminder for those folks that joined us before we get into talking with your guests, that if you have a question for Senator Hughes or any one of his guests this evening, you can press star 3, that's star 3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, now if we'd like to bring on our guests, and then we can begin the communication with those that have joined us.
Great. And again, I want to continue to remind folks, if you're not receiving our e-blasts, we call them on the issues, OTIs, on the issues, please go to the website, senatorhughes.com, and get your email address added in, or call my office and leave a message that you want to be added, and that number is 215-879-7777. Just again, to reiterate, we're going to begin the call with Dr. Whitney Kabe from Temple University Health System, the Lewis Katz School of Medicine, and ask Dr. Kabe to provide the listeners a brief understanding, a brief communication about what coronavirus is, what this is that we're dealing with, and why it's so important to follow the rules of social distancing and everything like that. Dr. Kabe?
I'm here.
The floor is yours.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Senator Hughes, for having me on. I'm really excited to speak with your constituents, and hopefully we can provide clarity today for any other questions. I'm going to start with just some like the who, what, when, where, and why of coronavirus. Hopefully some of this are things that you guys have already heard. COVID-19, I want to make sure people understand, is an acronym. It stands for Coronavirus Disease 2019, that was given a designation given by the World Health Organization when the virus first started to pop up in China in the late winter of 2019. You may have heard it called novel. That's not referring to books. That's essentially saying that it's new. So before it was originally discovered in China, there had never been any reported cases or scientific discovery of this particular strain. Because it's very new, there's still a lot that we need to learn about it, but as we get more in depth into this pandemic, the information in the scientific community continues to grow stronger in our knowledge and understanding of what's going on. The other what I want to talk about are the symptoms. People who get infected with COVID-19 can really experience a wide range of symptoms, all the way from shedding the virus but not having any symptoms at all, to becoming very, very ill to the point that they need to be hospitalized and or get on a ventilator. 80% of the people will have symptoms within the first 14 days after they catch the virus. But again, many of them will not know that they have it at all and never show any symptoms whatsoever. Most people, though, will get like a bad cold or mild cold symptoms or something on the range of like the flu. So the other big thing that people need to think about is who is at risk. Most people will not get very ill. But if you imagine that you have 100 friends or 100 people that you know who all catch COVID-19, 85 of them will not have any symptoms. 13 of them will get sick, ranging, again, from a mild cold to a terrible flu. And then two of your friends would be hospitalized. Of those two, one of them is definitely going to come home. But the other person has about a 1 in 8 chance of dying. And even though that's a very low number, it's much higher than what we see with like the typical seasonal flu that we all get vaccinated for. And the other part to know about that is that that one friend is not random. So people who are over the age of 65, who have other pre-existing conditions like diabetes, high blood pressure, heart disease, lung disease, are much more at risk for getting serious complications from this. And so for those reasons, and because, again, it's novel and it's never been in our community before, it has the potential to spread like wildfire. And with that really high death rate, we want to protect everyone that we can from getting really sick. And so that's why this has become such a big deal. So in terms of that protection, because there is no known cure, because we're very early in our understanding of the disease, because we don't have any effective treatments, our real ability to fight against this disease is by not spreading it in the first place. So I want to just reiterate that there is no definitive treatment, and anything that you're hearing about things like anti-malarial drugs is highly, highly speculative and very early. So those are not appropriate to be given out just, you know, willy-nilly. And really no physician would be prescribing those just like over the phone. That would be inappropriate. The best way for us to keep this from getting out of control is to keep each other safe by not spreading it amongst each other. And that's what social distancing is about. And in addition, you practicing really great hygiene, washing your hands thoroughly for 20 seconds every time that you come into contact with anything or out in public, using hand sanitizer when you don't have access to soap and water, making sure you're wiping down surfaces like your shopping cart, because it can live on surfaces for up to 72 hours. That's our current thought. And then again, just making sure that you're trying to stay at home as much as possible so that if you are one of those asymptomatic carriers, or if you're sniffling and sneezing, that you're not out potentially spreading this virus. I'll stop right there.
Thank you, Dr. KB. Appreciate you giving that good information. Again, a lot of that, what you've heard from the doctor, is consistent with other trusted sources that are providing a messaging on the issue of coronavirus. And again, we urge everyone to stay focused, not on everything, but on a few trusted sites. At the state level, health.pa.com, health.pa.com, we consider a trusted site for a lot of good information. We're going to ask our commissioner, chair of our commissions in Montgomery County, Valerie Arcouche, Dr. Valerie Arcouche, to provide some good information as to what's going on in the county. As you know, the 7th Senatorial District covers portions of Philadelphia and portions of Montgomery County. We wanted to make sure Dr. Arcouche got on and participated and spoke not just to my constituents, to hers as well. Dr. Akush, Val, thank you very much for joining us. What do you want the folks to understand? What do you want the folks to know?
Thanks, Senator. It's so nice of you to ask me to join you tonight, and good evening to everybody who's on the phone tonight. Well, the most important thing for people listening tonight to know is how important it is to stay at home. That is really the most important thing that you can do right now to help our entire community. And just to give you a sense of how quickly things have changed, Montgomery County was the first county in Pennsylvania to have two people test positive for the coronavirus. That was on Saturday, March the 7th, just a little over 2 weeks ago. Today, Tuesday the 24th, we now have 159 people in Montgomery County that have tested positive for coronavirus. And we have a number of people who have been tested and we're waiting to get their test results. So this is a disease, as you just heard from our other guests, that is very, very contagious, and people may not realize that they have the disease. So the reason that we have all these orders in place to stay at home and only go to work if you work at a life-sustaining business or run errands just to get the most essential things like food and medications, things like that, is that you may be fine, but you could be carrying the virus and not know it. And if someone who is elderly, who has multiple underlying medical conditions, or who is immunocompromised for any reason, maybe they're getting treatment for cancer, maybe they have severe diabetes, there's a lot of reasons why people's immune systems might not be working at 100%. Those are the individuals who are most likely to fall into that 10-15% where they end up with really severe problems. Just want to reiterate a couple things. The main symptoms of this disease, the most likely symptoms are a dry cough, a fever higher than 100.4, and difficulty breathing or shortness of breath. We've also seen some people who've lost their sense of smell. And a lot of the people who lose their sense of smell, that is their only symptom. So that's kind of a new and interesting one that we're hearing more about. And there's some people that are having as their first symptom some stomach distress. It could be nausea or diarrhea. Now that we're really into spring allergy season, I do want to reassure people that having a runny nose is almost never the first symptom. So usually you get one of these other things that I mentioned first, and some people do seem to develop a runny nose, but if that's your first symptom, then that is unlikely to be the coronavirus. Here in Montgomery County, we have a wonderful source of information, and you don't have to be a Montgomery County resident to find it useful. I think anyone in the Senator's District is welcome to access this site. It's montcopa.org/COVID-19. So montcopa.org/COVID-19. And we have an enormous amount of resources for the community, for businesses, for parents. We do have a community-based testing site up in Montgomery County, and there's information on how to make an appointment there. You do not have to be a Montgomery County resident to use that. So we can get into some of those details later, perhaps, if you'd like, Senator, but a wonderful resource for anybody in our region.
Thanks, Val. Appreciate you. Appreciate the work that's going on out in the county. Appreciate you being willing to take in anybody, no matter where they reside, to access some of those services and access that testing. Our final guest that we're asked to speak is Michael Froelich, who is one of the lead attorneys, managing attorney over at Community Legal Services here in Philadelphia. Michael's going to talk to us about the issues around foreclosure and eviction and things of that nature. We were successful, I guess it was last week, the time is going so intensely. We were successful in petitioning the state Supreme Court to put I guess, for lack of a better term, a stay on foreclosures and evictions for a couple of weeks while we tried to wrap our arms around this issue. But Michael and the folks at CLS, who are great and have been guests on these regular calls before, has some good information to provide folks. Michael, what are, thanks for being on the telephone town hall. What are the pieces of information that you want folks to know before we start taking questions?
Sure. Thanks so much, Senator Hughes. It's a pleasure to be on the call tonight with Dr. Kabe and Dr. Arkush. As the Senator mentioned, he and a number of his colleagues fought very hard to work with the Pennsylvania Supreme Court to say, look, it's a public health issue for people to be showing up in court. It's a public health issue for people to be rendered homeless during this time. And the Pennsylvania Supreme Court heard those requests, and as a result has shut down the courts for all but the most essential functions through the end of next week. So I'd like to just talk about two things in particular, and then if anyone has questions, would be happy to talk more beyond that. And I'd like to focus just on sort of what's going to happen to people if you or somebody that you know has experienced a loss of income due to job loss related to COVID-19, reduced income, you're quarantining and you can't get to work, or God forbid, you're suffering an illness in your family or yourself related to COVID-19. If you are a homeowner and you are unable to make your mortgage payment in April, it is very, very important that you reach out to your mortgage servicer right away and let them know. Let them know that as a result of the quarantine, as a result of the situation generally, you will not be able to make your April payment. Now, you may have heard in the media, in the news everywhere, that there are a number of programs which have been announced by the federal government affecting mortgages that are insured by the FHA or mortgages that are owned or insured by two big federal organizations called Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. They have imposed a 60-day moratorium on any new foreclosure activity. So that means through May, it's a bit of a breather so that people can figure out how are we going to move forward. And a number of mortgage servicers, including PHFA and others, have announced that they want to work with homeowners who are unable to pay their mortgages because of the virus. They want to see what they can do about providing a forbearance or a suspension in mortgage payments for up to 12 months that would then be repaid later because they wanted to see what can we do in order to prevent a mass wave of foreclosures like we saw 10 years ago. Nothing will happen here. If you or anybody you know are in this situation, the first step is to make sure that you reach out to your mortgage servicer, your mortgage company, and let them know what the situation that you're in. And this is equally important. Keep a record of all contacts that you have with your mortgage servicer. So if you make a phone call and you speak to somebody, please make sure that you write the date, the time, and if you can get it, the name of the person that you speak to, because that'll be vitally important in the future. One last thing about the mortgage issues. Please be careful of loan modification scams. There already are popping up people who are saying, can't pay your mortgage because of the virus. Contact us for free help. Be very, very careful about these scams. Get in touch with the senator's office. Get in touch with community legal services. There are trustworthy sources out there that can walk you through this. Please don't fall victim of those scams. The second quick thing that I want to mention is, what if you're a tenant and because of the virus, you're not able to get to work or for some other reason, and you're not able to pay for your rent? Three things to know. Number one, there will be no eviction lockouts or court hearings or anything through at least April 3rd. Number two, and that was part of the stay that that Senator Hughes and others were successful at pushing the Pennsylvania Supreme Court to order. Number two, there should be no evictions right now for at least the next 2 weeks. any evictions that happen is illegal, and a tenant should call 911 if their landlord locks them out of their house right now. Right now, health is more important than and people should not be losing their home. If you or anyone you know is facing an eviction right now or in the next 2 weeks, they should call 911. And number three is if you find that you're not able to afford your rent, please reach out to your landlord now to discuss and try to resolve it. We're receiving a lot of reports from landlords who are trying to be reasonable, trying to work with their tenants. I know this is not all landlords, but it's many landlords who are trying to figure, who recognize that we're all in this together. And remember that landlords cannot force somebody to move out without taking them to court. Let me close my initial remarks just with leaving two pieces of information. If you're a tenant and you're looking to discuss your legal options or seek legal representation or get updated information, you can call Community Legal Services Tenant Hotline at 267-443-2500. If you're a homeowner and you're looking to talk to a housing counselor or a legal aid lawyer, you can call the Save Your Home Philly hotline at 215-334-4663. If you're a Montgomery County resident and you call the Save Your Home Philly hotline, they'll also be able to refer you to Montgomery County Resources. Thanks so much.
Michael, thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate that good information. Again, for folks who have participated in these telephone town halls before, these are trusted individuals giving out solid information. I would not bring to you individuals who are not proven, who are not tested, who are not trusted in their profession to make sure that you get good information. Before we open the phones up, I want to say to Emma Chappelle and a few other folks who asked about support for businesses. The city has already approved a $9 million fund specifically for small businesses. And that is just the start of it. It's not the end of it. That is just the start of the work that the city is going to be doing to get additional support in for small businesses. Those are low interest or in fact no interest loans. Like I said, zero interest loans. And they'll be given to small businesses and for specific dollar amounts. You have to go to the city's website and begin the application process. The state just put together a $63 million fund also for small businesses. Again, 0% interest rates, 0% interest rates, and some breaks on the first year for paying back those loans. You have to go to the state of Pennsylvania's website to get that information. So for Emma, that's for your question because I'm looking at it online, and for a few others, I think I see Larry, who owns a barbershop, and a few other folks who are asking about financial assistance to businesses. Those are two pieces that are not the end. I want to be real clear, that are not the end. There's $63 million at the state level, $9 million at the City of Philadelphia level for small businesses, focused on small businesses. And let's be clear that all that action occurred in 10 days' time. That's pretty rapid, as Dr. Arkush would tell us. That's pretty rapid work for government to operate in that fashion. And those are not the end of the programs that are being put in place to provide assistance. So, with that being said, Hugh, I think we need to start taking some calls for the next 30 minutes, and let's see what folks have to say.
Okay, Senator. Before we do, just a reminder for those that have just joined us. If you have a question for Senator Hughes or anyone of his guests tonight, you can press *3 on your phone's keypad. That's *3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to go to Patricia. Patricia, go ahead. You're live with Senator Hughes.
Hello. Good evening, everyone. My question is, I would like to know how long does this virus stay in you? How long are the people who have come down with it, it takes for them to get rid of it, or do they ever really fully recover from it?
Dr. KB, can you answer that one, please?
Yeah, sure. That's a really good question. So most people will develop symptoms within 14 days of an exposure from actually catching it. And most evidence right now is suggesting that you should remain in quarantine 14 days after a known exposure, and then up to 7 days after symptom resolution, you will clear the virus. You know, just like any other illness, your body develops antibodies. Your immune system kicks in to help you fight it off. The fever is actually part of that help, that fight. You know, you're taking your vitamin C and doing whatever typical things you do when you get colds and flus to try to help yourself feel better, and simultaneously your body is working to help clear it. So once you've resolved the fever, and once you've stopped having the other symptoms like the cough, cold, runny nose, we're asking people to stay, again, still in isolation for the next 7 days. But after you start to feel better, you know, eventually you're going to be able to get back to your full function, and you won't continue to be infectious, and you won't continue to have it in your body. If you saw a similar virus later on that looked, you know, very close to that in your body, you would get that antibody response, and you wouldn't have nearly as bad of an issue with it the next time.
Thank you. Here, the next one, and folks, we've got a lot of folks calling in. We got a lot of good messages with good information, so we want to get you to your question quickly, and of course for our guests, a similar kind of response. Go ahead, Hugh.
Thank you, Patricia. Thank you for your call. Senator, we're going to go to Robert. Robert, go ahead. You're live with Senator Hughes and guests.
Oh, how you doing, Senator Hughes?
Hey, Rob.
Yeah, I was able to go to Harrisburg for that clemency hearing on the 4th of this month, and I did pretty well. So I want to thank you for that.
Congratulations. Good for you, man.
Thank you. And listen, I had a question about the response that the government is taking as far as COVID-19. And I heard that one of your guests say that typically most people are able to shed the virus after they are infected with it. What is the next step as far as dealing with this virus? Are we going to continue to have people stay indoors for the rest of the year, perhaps, or is there any time frame that we can get back to what we consider normal, or is it better to just actually have the virus and recover from it?
Dr. Akush, thanks, Robert. Thanks for asking the question. Val, can you take a stab at that one?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. And Robert, those are really, really good questions. So I think one of the things that everyone is wrestling with right now is that this is a new virus. It's not like anything else that we've seen before. And so to be perfectly honest with you, we're all learning together as we go through this. The point of asking people to stay home that I mentioned earlier is not only about making sure that people who could become very sick from the virus are protected, but we're also trying to reduce the number of people who have the virus so that our hospitals don't get overwhelmed. I'm sure you've seen reports from Italy and from New York City even, where there's just thousands and thousands of people who are sick, and many of them requiring hospitalization. So the first step is to try to get everybody to stay home for, you know, 2-3 weeks, and hopefully we can really decrease the amount of transmission that's happening out there in the community. And once that time period is over, we are all going to have to take stock and see where we're at. Because although it's very tempting to say, you know, maybe for most of us, if we're relatively healthy, it would be okay to get it. We'll probably, you know, we might be sick for a few days, but we should be okay. This virus is deadly for some members of our community. And so we're trying to just keep the spread low, make sure that our hospitals don't get overwhelmed so that the people who do get really sick can get care. and continue to see how this plays out over these next few weeks. And we're constantly reassessing every single day what our plans are for next steps.
Thank you, Val. Hugh?
We're ready to go. Thank you, Robert, for the question. Senator, we're going to go to Cecilia. Cecilia, go ahead. You're live with Senator Hughes and guests.
Hey, Cecilia. Thanks for getting on the call.
Good evening. Thanks for the opportunity. My question is, I have a child living with severe autism, and unfortunately, the School District of Philadelphia has not provided any guidance or any materials for him, because the learning guides aren't for children with severe disabilities.
Right.
What can you do as a senator to make sure that children with disabilities, like my son, get modified work so we don't fall behind and have to do comp ed because he's not getting anything?
Good question, Cecilia, and thank you. So what I'd like to do is make sure that we get your information directly, Cecilia, so that we can contact the school district and make the direct connection between you and the folks at the school district to solve this issue. You're presenting a very real issue with a that requires a very real response, and you're representing not just yourself, but you're representing a lot of young people. So if there's a way to see that you can give our office a call tomorrow and leave your phone number on our answering machine or email the office at senatorhughes.com, we will make sure we get back to you directly about how to get the special services for your child. Very important point. And then what we will do, folks, everyone else on the call, what we'll do is we'll post that and e-blast that out throughout our e-blast program and on our website. So thanks a lot, Cecilia. Hugh, you have another caller?
Yep. Cecilia, thank you very much for your call. So we're going to go to Juanita. Juanita, go ahead. You're live with Senator Hughes and guests.
Good evening, Senator and guests.
Hey,
my question is for the doctor. I want to know if you can get the coronavirus twice, and let me see, do you think that it might decrease by the time it gets to Philadelphia, or is it going to be a upscale thing before it get down?
Thanks, Juanita. Dr. KB, we got two docs on the line. Dr. KB, what you got on that one?
So there is no evidence currently that people can be reinfected. There were some early concerns about that, but the latest data that I had access to suggests that that is not the case. It should be a one and done thing. For question two, you know, we're still trying to increase the amount of testing that we do in our region in order to get a better sense of exactly how widespread it is. But I think we can all anticipate, I work in the emergency department, so we're seeing an uptick. And just like Dr. Arkush said, we're seeing an increase in cases throughout the region. So this is likely to get worse before it gets better. Will we have as severe of a time as New York? That part is currently unknown. But the longer that we are conscientious, good citizens, and caring of each other by trying to do as much social distancing as we can, the better off our whole community will be.
Thank you, Dr. KB.
Thank you, Juanita, for the question. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to Josephine. Josephine, go ahead. You're live with Senator Hughes and guests.
Hello.
Hey,
yes,
Josephine.
Good evening, everyone. Good evening, especially to your guests and also to you, Senator Hughes.
My question is surrounding
a concern regarding this the Pennsylvania DOC prison system. And is there anything in place, or has anything been done additional to try to prevent a widespread or from even the virus even hitting in there, which is going to be pretty hard because of the close quarters they live in.
Yeah, they
still, you know, they're moving about the prison, they're working. Do they have adequate gloves? Do they have, are they giving them, and as a matter of fact, gloves and masks.
All the protective equipment.
And they're going to work on a daily basis. The ones that work there, they're still going to work. They're out and they're living in, whether you're in a cell or whether you're in a dorm setting, you're still in a very close quarters.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, based on what my experience is that if something hits in that prison or any of those prisons, it's going to go through there so quickly. And I have a personal concern, of course, I'm calling because my son is housed at Montanoy, and he's working, and he's been diagnosed with a ulcerative colitis, which is not a curable disease, and he's been in and out of the infirmary in the hospital there, not there at the hospital, but in a neighboring town in a hospital. So I'm concerned about him personally, but I'm concerned also about, is anyone looking into this? Because they have stopped visitors. There's no visitors coming in. But you don't need visitors to come in. You have the guards coming in. You have employees coming in.
Right.
You have,
Hey, Josephine, let me do this. Thanks for your call. And I want to make sure that you get connected with Tiffany Wilson in my office. 215-879-7777. Leave a specific message for Tiffany so she can get your son's information, and we'll do a direct inquiry about your son. Just as a backdrop, and I'll let after I finish, I'll let Val and Mike jump on this if they'd like. This past Saturday morning at 9 a.m., we had the Pennsylvania Legislative Black Caucus had an extended conference call with our corrections secretary, John Wetzel, who's doing a very good job. And there's a prolific program that he's put together to try to protect and secure all of the individuals who are in our state prisons. Wetzel is one of the best in the country, by not just by me, but by national reputation. It's been very, very prolific in terms of the work being done to protect those who are incarcerated, to protect the workers, equipment, all kinds of stuff like that. And one of the things that we may do if we can get it scheduled, is have Secretary Wetzel on one of our upcoming telephone town halls so that he can speak specifically to this issue and get good information out to everyone. But what we heard on the call was a very good effort by the corrections secretary in terms of trying to deal with this. Val, you've got some county prisons in Montgomery County, and Mike Froelich, you deal with a lot of folks who are in this space asking these kind of questions. Val, any precautions that you're looking at in terms of the facilities inside the county?
Sure, I'd be happy to address that, Senator. So in Montgomery County, we have one county correctional facility that has about 1,450 people in it in general. We've actually reduced that population by about 500 people over the last year or so with a number of reforms that we've put in place to keep people out of prison who really don't need to be there. So we've taken a number of steps. We have very stringent medical protocols in place. Our staff do have enough personal protective equipment, and they're using it as needed. We have worked to not have anybody new come into the prison unless the charge is so significant that they really must be put there. So we had our president judge instruct our magisterial district judges to assign the least restrictive punishment to anyone who's brought in before them. And we are not incarcerating anyone in Montgomery County right now simply because they cannot make a bail payment. We've also worked to release some people early. We've been able to release about 50 people who were close to release and get them out a little bit early. And we also have a program where people spend only the weekends in the correctional facility. The people who are on the weekend incarceration are not coming in on the weekends any longer. They're being kept at, or you know, they're under monitoring at home on the weekends rather than coming in. And we're working to get additional individuals out of the correctional facility as we can. So we've got a lot of protocols in place. There's no more visits to the correctional facility. We have increased the ability for phone calls and things like that to help compensate. But the caller is exactly right that we have to be incredibly careful of this population that are in relatively close housing. And we're doing everything we can to make sure that none of our inmates become sick.
Michael, you have thanks, Val. Michael, you have anything to add to issues around those who are incarcerated?
Not really. Community Legal Services largely works with and represents individuals once they get out. I agree with the caller's concern. It's a concern of mine personally. I note that there, you know, it's the Philadelphia District Attorney, the Philadelphia Defenders Association, and many folks in Philadelphia share your concern, caller, and have raised this as well. I think you're doing the right thing by raising this as well with your elected officials and making sure that everybody, you know, that you raise it as well with others as well who might be in a position to do something. But I don't have anything else to add, I'm afraid.
Okay, that's no problem, Michael. We will work on getting the Secretary Wetzel on one of these town halls to really provide good information about what he's doing inside the state's facilities. Hugh, we have another caller.
Yes, we do. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to Sandra. Sandra, go ahead. You're live with Senator Hughes and Guest.
Good evening, Senator Hughes.
Thank you, Sandra.
And your guest. My question is, as a preventative measure, now I was told if you get the coronavirus, the part that makes it hard for you to breathe is that the mucus solidifies in your lungs. Now, I was told to prevent this in case you were to get it. If you now would gargle your mouth at least twice a day with an antiseptic and drink warm beverages like tea, coffee, hot chocolate, all of that is fine, but to stay away from cold beverages. I just want to know if that's true.
Dr. KB? Thank you, Sandra. Dr. KB?
Hi, Sandra. Thank you for that question. I've heard the same from other members of our community. We have no evidence that drinking warm fluids will prevent the severe complications of the coronavirus. Why certain people, and even certain people in that higher risk groups, get it very badly and others don't, unfortunately, we don't have those kind of details. So I would suggest the things that we know are beneficial in terms of preventing it, you know, keeping good hand hygiene, staying away from people who are sick. If you are in one of those high-risk groups, like being immunosuppressed, being someone who is elderly, someone who has other medical conditions, making sure that you're trying to do as much distancing as possible, those are really kind of more proven ways to keep yourself well. And once you do come down with symptoms that might seem similar to what we've described, you know, Tylenol first, Motrin possibly, those are better probably for you than to try to do something specifically with warm fluids. I've got no evidence that that's really beneficial.
Thank you, Dr. KB. Another caller, Hugh?
Yep. Senator, we're going to go to Pamela, go ahead. You're live with Senator Hughes and Guest.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
This town hall is a wonderful idea, and so that we can get our questions out. Mine is, what is SEPTA doing to prevent the spread of this virus on our public transportation, buses, trains, and also, like, the seniors, we all ride paratransit, and how can, you know, what are they doing to, you know, to clean them up somewhat?
We're going to find out specifically on that, Pam. What we do know is that SEPTA has reduced their services. I believe everything is on every day now is on a Saturday schedule. That's important for a whole lot of reasons. One of them is the, you know, fewer people out in the street, following the governor, the mayor, and the commissioner's orders, and so requires fewer buses and trains. Therefore, that makes it harder to spread the disease. I believe they've instituted a much more aggressive cleaning program amongst their buses and the train cars. But we'll find out some specific information to make sure that we get that out there. But if you go to, what is it, SEPTA.org, I'm going to do that while I'm sitting here at my computer and see what I can find out. We should be able to understand exactly what their program is. All right?
Pamela, thank you very much for your call. Senator, let's go to Anita. Anita, go ahead. You're live with Senator Hughes and guests.
Good evening, Senator Hughes and all the panel. Peace and blessings. I was calling because I have heard about coronavirus getting on cloth or clothing. How do that happen, and how long do it stay?
Dr. KB?
Yeah, so this is another area where we're continuing to get more information. I think that, so just like any other, you know, respiratory virus, like when you sneeze or when you cough hard and little particles, little droplets come out, those particles can get onto surfaces. They can get onto your hands. That's why we're asking people to wash their hands so well and to cough into their arm instead of, you know, coughing directly into their hands. It can spray onto surfaces like, you know, your clothes and things like that. So those particles will last for a while after you've moved on, or the person who's coughed or sneezed has moved on. It's not like some viruses or some illnesses where the particles are like gathered in the air. So you don't have to worry that just because you're walking down the street and someone coughed in front of you that you're gonna, you know, instantly inhale a whole bunch of bad stuff. But we do know that it can live on surfaces after people have moved past. And so the very conservative, meaning like the longest amount of time that we think is likely, is about 72 hours. So that's a good estimate on how long you should be concerned about a surface that's maybe been touched by coronavirus. So the best way for you to take care of surfaces around your home or when you go out to the grocery store or other places that we're allowed to go is to carry some wipes with you. If you're not able to find wipes and you've got bleach in your house, you can take a cap full of bleach and mix that with a quart of water, put some of those into some old spray bottles, and you can carry something like that in your, you know, your bag or your car with a, you know, a roll of paper towels, and you can wipe things down that way. You can make your own homemade cleaner.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. KB. Just getting back to that question about SEPTA and the cleaning of its vehicles. I'm looking at the SEPTA website, SEPTA.org, SEPTA.org. And on their website, they talk about instituting, and they've got photographs to prove it, an aggressive cleaning program for all of their stations and all of their cars on the regional rail and, of course, all of the buses, sometimes several times a day. So I would suggest for that question that you keep stay close to their website, and to the extent that you're in that line of business, probably replicate it. Cleaning transportation vehicles on a regular basis can only be helpful, but quite frankly, given the commissioner's orders and given the mayor's orders and given the governor's orders, everybody's supposed to be staying home anyway. Hugh, we got another caller?
Yep, Senator, we'll move to our next caller. We're going to go to Janie. Janie, go ahead. You're live with Senator Hughes and guests.
Yes. I just wanted to know how are the tests administered for this virus? I mean, how and where?
Thank you, Janie. Val, why don't you start off with that one?
Sure, I'd be happy to do that. So it's a very, very simple test. It involves taking a swab, which is like a big Q-tip, and placing it either inside your nose, and it does have to go in a little bit deep, so it's uncomfortable for a second, or in the back of your throat, or depending on which test is being used, maybe both places. So it's just a swab. It doesn't involve drawing blood or anything like that. And in Montgomery County, if you are having symptoms or believe that you've been exposed to someone, maybe you've gotten a phone call that you were direct exposure to someone, we do have a community-based testing site up on the Ambler campus of Temple University, which is in Upper Dublin, and we do it by appointment. So you can either go online at montcopa.org/COVID-19, and there's a button at the top of the page that says community testing information, and a very simple form to fill out. It does not require insurance. There's no charge to do these tests. If you have insurance, we'll bill it, but there's no copay, and if you don't have insurance, it's not a problem at all. If you don't have good internet access or you don't have an email address, you can make an appointment by phone, and that's at 610-631-3000. So 610-631-3000. And you'll be given an hour time frame. You can come anytime within that hour. And the test, the site is very efficient. You never get out of your car. It's just a drive-through type of a deal. And we move people through very quickly. We've tested a little over 1,000 people since we opened it last Friday.
Thanks, Dr. Valerie Arkush, our Montgomery County Commissioner Chairwoman. Thank you very much, Val. Thank you, Dr. KB, Dr. Whitney KB from Temple University Health Systems. Appreciate you very much. Thank you, Mike Froelich. I'm looking at a couple of questions. Will Carter, are they giving people help for utility bills? PGW, PICO, all have suspended temporarily shutoffs and all that kind of stuff on utility bills. However, you can also go to the respective websites of utilities and make sure you're putting your applications in for your LIHEAP and anything like that. If you see difficulty with your utilities, make sure you call up the utility company and let them know there's some issues, there's some problems, and always make sure on utility stuff you give our office a call. Ask to speak to Tiffany Wilson, 215-879-7777. 215-879-7777. Marcy Cohn, how quickly can she get money for her store and how does she apply for it? Marcy, go to the State of Pennsylvania's website, I think it is going to be under the Department of Community and Economic Development, and you'll be able to begin the process of filling out the application for state support for small businesses. If you're in, and so that doesn't matter what county you're in, Montgomery County, Philadelphia County, any county, the $63 million that's been set aside has been specifically targeted for small businesses. If you're in the city of Philadelphia, the city of Philadelphia's website is an application process there also. Both are focused on small businesses, small shops, all right, small operations. Healthcare employees, because of the pressure on our hospitals and healthcare systems, a lot of folks, nurses, aides, doctors, all kinds of folks who are working in hospitals and healthcare environments are moving up to the top of the line on testing in many situations. Not all situations, but many situations. These are the people who are on the front line. They're taking care of folks on a daily basis. They're on the front line. So not in all situations, but on many situations, they're getting moved up on the testing piece to the front of the line so we can make sure that they're okay so they can go back to work, or if they're not okay, that we can take them out of work so they don't infect other people. Everyone, please go to our website, senatorhughes.com. Get locked in with your email address so you can receive our e-blasts. They're going out twice a day, one in the morning, one in the late afternoon, twice a day with good information about what is happening. We'll be doing one of these telephone town halls next week. It might even, I think it's April 1, I think it's the date that we're scheduled for. So stay tuned for that information. And just look, follow trusted websites, okay? MontgoPA.org, MontgoPA.org/COVID-19, trusted website. Health.pa.gov, trusted website. If you want to get, listen to this one, if you want to get on the City of Philadelphia's texting alert program, the texting alert program, type in COVID, PHL, COVID-PHL to 888-777. COVID, PHL, 888-777, and then you will get, like I get, regular text messages from the City of Philadelphia about updates on what they're doing. And finally, on the issue of essential and non-essential businesses, go to our website, centershughes.com. There's a link there that lists out what the governor has determined as essential and non-essential businesses to stay open. And that's senatorhughes.com, senatorhughes.com. Thank you, everybody. Stay tuned. Follow the instructions. Stay home. Don't buy up all the toilet paper. There's going to be plenty of toilet paper you have, all right? That's not going out, okay? Don't. When you take all that stuff, you may be preventing other folks from getting access to it. Hugh? Anything else I missed?
No, I just want to remind those that are with us, if you didn't have a chance to ask your question to Senator Hughes or his guest, just remain in the line. You'll be able to leave the question on a voicemail for Senator Hughes, and he and his staff will get back with you. I just want to remind everybody about your information for some housekeeping. Senator Hughes's office number, again, is 215-879-7777. His website is senatorhughes.com. So I wanted to thank everybody that joined us here this evening, and I wish all of you a good evening.
Addie Andrews, it's time to get your driver's license. Can you still drive up to get to the license center? I think the license center is out. I think they've been closed down. But call our office, ask to speak to Tiffany Wilson, because we don't want the police to stop you without an updated driver's license. That's not fair, all right? 215-879-7777. Ask to speak to Tiffany Wilson. All right, folks, thank you very much. Wash your hands, everybody. Wash your hands. Thank you.
Have a good evening.